And next up, we are going to be looking at a fintech CRO's risky perspectives on an agile culture to enable innovation and growth. And to take us through this is Nicola Komnenos, who is a CFA and the Chief Risk Officer of Purple Group, where she's responsible for group risk, sustainability, governance, legal, and compliance for the group and its subsidiaries, including but not limited to a brand that seemed to come out of nowhere, and now you see it everywhere. Easy Equities, and also Easy Crypto and Easy Properties. She is a non-executive vice chair of the Institute of Risk Management of South Africa's board, serves as non-executive director of Africa Global Exchange, is the executive managing director of Cloud Atlas ETF Management Company, and is a chair and trustee of Easy Equities Retirement Annuity Preservation Pension and Preservation Provident Funds, and trustee of the Easy Umbrella Fund as well. With 18 years experience in financial markets, her previous roles include Group Chief Risk Officer at the JSE, Chair of the JSE Pension Fund Board, World Federation of Exchanges Risk Working Group Vice Chair, Managing Director of the Nautilus Group, and many more. Her qualifications include being a CFA charter holder, BCom Honours and BCom Investment Management degrees, both cum laude, and she was awarded the IRMSA 2020 Risk Manager of the Year Award, and her team was awarded the Industry Specific Risk Initiative Award in the Financial Services category in 2021. Ladies and gentlemen, let's please welcome onto the stage our second female speaker of the day. I will highlight that. And someone who's going to give us the tech perspective of what we do in this world of finance. I'm speaking about Nicola Komnenos, who is the Chief Risk Officer at Purple Group.
Thank you so much. I think I should say what Anne said. Now we've wasted a whole lot of minutes. Now I've got less time to speak. But yeah, it's really great to be here. And I think that my discussion, even though I'm at a fintech group, is more focused on culture, which is something quite interesting to discuss in a room full of academic-minded individuals. So let's see how this goes. But the perspectives I wanted to share today, or the brief I was given, is more around how we implement our agile culture within Purple Group and all the various subsidiaries, Easy Equities, Easy Properties, et cetera, in order to deliver on innovation and growth. So that is quite a tricky thing to try and explain. If we think about culture, it's about the smell of the place. It's the way we do things around here. It's our behavioral elements. It's something you don't build overnight. It's something that develops over time. So, but let me give you a glimpse into that world. But before I jump into that, I don't know if you can read the words nicely here, but I just want to quickly get a perspective from the room. So you can just lift your hand up if you're in one of these categories. So when we talk about agile culture or agile delivery model, it's often compared to the waterfall delivery model. So now we're talking sort of project management. And it really is the traditional waterfall delivery model is essentially where you take and you draft up a full business requirement specification, and you tell your developers, this is the product I want to build, this is my target market, etc. The developers go and build it. A few months later, they come back and they show you what they've done, and you realize, actually, that wasn't really what I wanted. So the agile model is now completely turning that upside down, and we do iterative approaches, we do squads, we do sessions where we review the code like literally weekly. We review the requirements and we say, well, actually, is that still what we wanted to do? Because now the market thinking is moving ahead. So what I wanted to get a sense of, is your business in the sort of environment where you do agile as part of your DNA? It's part of the way you operate. It's embedded in your culture. It's your delivery model. Just raise your hands. Cool. And I think our next speaker at the end of today is also in that environment. And then the complete opposite side of the spectrum, is your business in the more sort of traditional waterfall approach where you've got a business analyst that comes in, you've got a product owner, you write up the business requirement spec, and then you're doing it. So everything needs to be specced up front. Are you in that world? Any hands? Too scared to admit? More of a hybrid where you do a bit of both? No one in the hybrid world. Okay, more in the hybrid world. Okay. And then maybe, so from looking back at my JSE days, I'm in the full agile world now where it's embedded in the culture. I was in a world where we did it just for specific projects and for specific products. So it was on a case-by-case basis, and we used it more for a case study and to prove the concept, a proof of concept, and then we rolled it out gradually. So are there any other people that's in that world where it's more proof of concept? And the rest of you guys just don't have an idea what I'm talking about. Okay, cool. Let me unwrap it. Okay, so essentially what I wanted to chat to you about today is what does effective agility look like? So how does an effective model of an agile business result in you being able to deliver growth and innovation? So what does that business look like, feel like? How is it designed? And I'm not an academic, so I'm going to give you a real case study. I'm just going to give you some insights into how we structure ourselves, how we run our business, so that you can use that as an example. So Purple Group, probably not seen more as a fintech sort of startup anymore. We're listed on the JSE. We've been around for about 20 years. But within our group, we've got startup companies. One of the flagship ones that was mentioned by our MC is Easy Equities, that's been around for about 9 years now. So still sort of seen as a startup fintech. And then we've got others like Easy Properties, Easy Crypto, and then our latest edition, Easy ETFs. So before I go into the agile model, though, and talking about risk management tools and how you actually approach that to be effective, to be able to innovate, to be able to deliver new, exciting products, I want to just take you back to why are we all doing this? Like, what is the purpose? And the purpose statement for us is that we took a step back as a business, and we thought about what is the problem that we are trying to solve. All of our businesses exist for a reason. I think just go back, take a bit of time, just where you're sitting now and think about what is your business? What is the problem the company you're working for is trying to solve? That's the reason we're in business, is we're trying to solve world problems. So the first thing that we try to solve is the wealth gap. And so in our minds, that is something that's continuously widening. COVID even made it even worse. We heard earlier only 6% of South Africans can retire comfortably. We want to change that problem. So that is a real problem statement. We turned that into an opportunity to bring in a solution. And our solution that we wanted to focus on was an easy, enjoyable, rewarding, educational, and frictionless platform. Now, those words sound easy to say, but when you're in an agile working business environment, and remember, I came from the JSE environment, which is a complete corporate structure. We mainly did waterfall approach, mainly had a lot of governance, a lot of red tape. Now, the last year or so, I've been in this fintech world. And when you say the word frictionless, essentially what you're saying is the user experience needs to be phenomenal. You need to fall in love with what you are seeing in your hands. So as an example, the Easy Equities app, what you're seeing in there needs to engage you, needs to keep you engaged. It shouldn't take 5, 6, 7 clicks to try and figure it out. If it doesn't work with the first click, go back to the drawing board. So there's a lot of designing, reiterative, scrapping, and redesigning and rethinking yourself. So that's in the essence of that. And then we designed around that our purpose statement, which is really that we want to democratize investing. And all that that means is we want to make investing accessible to everyone. And then we put a very big, hairy, audacious goal out there that we want to be the best investment platform in the world. So for those that follow us, we are now launching in Southeast Asia and the Philippines in the next month or so, and we're going up into Kenya. Very brave new worlds we are going into. Worlds and environments where we don't see the financial wealth gap having been closed. So we won't go into the Americas or into the European markets. That's not where we're trying to solve this problem. So now that you know the problem we're trying to solve, now we're talking about how do we deliver on agility? And one of the key things that we look at in our business model, we've got an agile manifesto. So I haven't put it on here on the slides, but those are like our code of conduct. We've got like rules of how we operate in our business environment. And the thing that underlines that is the basic concept of triple bottom line. So looking at the triple P's, planet, people, and profit. And we've taken that profit one and we've turned that upside down into focusing on purpose because we believe we can't get any profits if we don't have a purpose. So for the first 6 years of running Easy Equities, we didn't make a profit. And you can imagine how much slack we came under from our shareholders, et cetera, the pressure. And because our investors aren't doing well in this current suppressed economic conditions, we are also under a lot of pressure from our shareholders. But we continuously remind them of our purpose statement and the problem we're trying to solve, and the reason we exist, the why. And the how that we're doing it is through culture. And so when we do our interviewing process, it's extremely strict in terms of being able to cross through those gates of the interviewing process, because you've got to have agility in your DNA. You've got to understand what it means to be able to enable and to be able to problem solve in a way that will result in growth. It really does push you to the nth of your risk appetite, potentially, especially me, having come from quite a traditional corporate. But it is a phenomenal journey, and it does help you think about the world in a completely different way. So our motto, brave enough to fail to succeed. We've got to make mistakes. We make many of them, but we make them quickly. Rather discover your mistake now. Try something. If you didn't do something, how would you know whether it was right or wrong? In corporate, I wasted years sitting and trying to put beautiful plans together, but we didn't take enough action. So yes, so this is one of the DNA elements of an agile fintech. And then culture enabling strategy delivery. It said that strategy, that culture can eat strategy for breakfast. And in our environment, we actually do like a very rigid culture assessment, agile culture. You get a 360 review of your peers, whichever parts of business they sit in, and they actually attest to whether you've lived by that culture. Have you used that in your day-to-day life? And that's part of our performance review process. We also have the concepts of OKRs, so objectives and key results. So we put our delivery performance review process is all linked to our company objectives and then the key results you want to deliver on. And we do reviews literally on a three-monthly basis. This is just to give you a sense roughly how we structured. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on these slides, but essentially you'll see our main product vertical is on the investment side. And we've got businesses like Easy Equities, Easy Crypto, Easy Properties, which will eventually expand into another line of crowd investing. And then we've got managed investing. We've got a business, Rise, which does multi-management and also fund administration. And then Easy Asset Management, which is essentially where we run most of our bundles, and that's where the ETF business will sit. The next business, vertical is this is the new world. So the previous slide is in our world, those things are old already. So those things have already been set up. Those are fintech startups. They're running. These are the new things we're working on, and we're continuously pushing the boundaries in terms of new innovative areas we can get involved in. So now we're busy in the product vertical Transact, and we're partnering with Sanlam on delivering an easy credit product. So to try and make it easy to be able to get a short-term loan using your shares pretty much as collateral. And then there's some placeholders for other elements. And then the third sphere is on the protect side. For many of the actuaries in the room, this is probably your closer to home for you. We've got Easy Protect Life, which is a demo product that we launched with Sanlam Indy. And again, really just went live with something to test the market, to test the interest. And we did that with a group of whitelisted clients, and we're now redesigning, going back and seeing how we can improve on that. So that's the various areas and the breadth of our ambitions. And this is the way we structure ourselves to deliver on an agile delivery model. So we've got what we call five squads. So I fit into the Easy Trust squad. It's all the boring stuff, legal, compliance, group risk, et cetera, governance. And then the rest of the squads have a specific manifesto that they focus on. So the growth squad is essentially everything to do with new products, new partners, all of the innovation type elements that happen in there. And that's the growing the group element. And then we've got an easy enable squad, which is pretty much your marketing, branding, all of those things. Our platform squad is pretty much the technology element. And that's the heart of our business. Because we're a fintech, most of our people are actually developers or technical experts. So they would fall into this squad. And then Easy Serve, which is our finance and our operational elements. This is to give you a sense of how we look at the value that every individual adds in the organization. Each of us, every single employee that works for us, we've got about 200 now, we've got about 40 employed in the Philippines. Each and every one of us has to write down a purpose statement, and we review that annually. So I've got to tell the rest of my colleagues, why am I here? So it's the complete opposite way of thinking about it. Generally, you apply for a job, you go work at a company, and you've got a job profile. In an agile fintech, it's the other way around. You come in and you prove to your colleagues how you can add value. You tell them what your purpose statement is and what you are going to do to help contribute to innovation and growth within this business. It's a completely different environment and approach. So, and very, very refreshing. I think this is just to give you a sense. So we're literally like pitching yourself. You're saying, these are all the things, my background, my career. I'm not traditionally from a risk background. I actually worked in equities and equity derivatives and, you know, business origination, product development. And then later on in my career, a few years ago, I went into the CRO role and I'm more closer to compliance. So it's probably less of a shock to my system being in a fintech, because I think a lot of the traditional governance risk compliance roles have a lot of very clear structures that you've got to work within. In our environment, I create guardrails. I create a structure within which we can operate innovatively, but within the legal boundaries. And so the other important thing of this is just really around how we, our OKRs that I mentioned earlier, is we each and every one of us put forward what are the things, what are the objectives I want to achieve in the next quarter, and what are the key results that I'm going to look after. And we expose that to the whole company. So everyone's OKRs are in our system. All of our systems are digitally open. We work on things like Slack. And we've got a HiBob system, which is our engagement platform. And all of those pieces of technology are platforms where we can interact and engage with each other. So we put our objectives on there. And if someone doesn't like it, they can come and they can challenge you, and you have to redesign it. But this slide is the most important one. And this is the one that sort of is the heart and soul of what an agile business construct looks like from our perspective. Is that essentially we have these five pillars. We've got the platform one, which was the tech one I mentioned, the grow one, innovation, enable, which is more of the taking to market, the serve one, which is finance and ops, and then trust, which was the one that I look after. But essentially what it says is we've got to have multidisciplinary teams put together. And so what we do in our business environment is we have at least someone from the grow pillar. We've got someone from enable, someone from serve, someone from trust and platform, and all of them together make up our agile delivery team. So it's a completely different, also from the traditional corporate structures where you've got a reporting line where, yes, the team and the trust, like the lawyers and the compliance officers and the risk people, they report to me. I am what we call their coach. We call ourselves coaches. We're not traditional sort of director structure. But the reason we use the word coach is because I play a very different role. I cheer them on and give them guidance and direction in terms of what they can do, but they run independently in a separate squad. So you can imagine it's a team, let's just use this example of five people from completely different expertise, someone from technology, someone that's product development, someone from finance, someone from ops, someone from legal. Together they get, they come together and they say, okay, we want to design this new Easy Protect Life product. And the difference in our model is also complete accountability. So you've got to be able to trust the people in your environment. And if you don't, then obviously Agile won't work for your business environment. So you give them a lot of access and you give them a lot of trust, and you let them run and you let them make mistakes. And you've got to also be quite flexible in terms of if there's something that they didn't do well, that you don't come down so hard on them that they won't try again. So I just want to check time. Okay, we're not doing too poorly. So that's the heart of what we do. And then the next few slides, just high level, I wanted to give you a sense of how do we then make sure that we practically deliver on that. So I mentioned to you the why we exist. So we put our purpose statement together and then we unpack the purpose statement and we say these are all the enablers. I'm not going to bore you with the details, but essentially we then say each and every staff member within our business has to link one of their objectives and their key results or multiple to these various enablers. And they've got to prove how they are adding value to the business. So again, needing to really, you know, prove to the rest of your colleagues how you are adding value and continuously pushing yourself out of your comfort zone in terms of taking on more and growing your knowledge set. Then the other one is our group strategy drivers. So this is then, once we clear on our purpose, we then set very clear strategic objectives for ourselves. And so in terms of some of the things on here, it's like shareholder alignment and our growth strategy and our value drivers. But what I wanted to highlight on this slide is that it's all about going all in the same direction. So all being very clear about what the core value drivers are that we're measuring value being added in the business. So in our environment, we use our value drivers of average revenue per user, And we use reduced cost to serve and number of customers are some of the core ones that we use. And every person has certain targets that they need to achieve to prove that they've contributed to those elements. And then this is the end result of what we've been able to achieve. Our investors being roughly representative of the South African demographics. So on average, black male. Our female stats are getting a bit better. We're getting more black females on board. And then some of the metrics that we measure ourselves against, one of them that's really important for us is the percentage of our clients that have been referred to us by existing clients, which talks to the user experience. So these are the stats that are important to us. We want clients to refer other clients to us because they enjoy the experience on the platform. And if they don't, we have user forums where we get feedback from our clients and we go back to the drawing board and we redesign. If we launch new products, we ask clients what new products they want. So it's a completely client-driven model and an engagement model. And just roughly 30% is from social media. So a lot, and roughly 30 years old. So it's a young cohort of investors. As I mentioned, we weren't profitable in the first 6 years. It takes about a 2 to 3 year period for our investors to become profitable for us. And our profit margins are low because our core purpose is to enable investing. We don't want to make a huge amount of money. We want to provide access to markets and investing. I think this question was more around how does risk management contribute the most to business value? And I think more also just a quick show of hands, who believes in the combined assurance model to do risk management? There are a lot of risk managers in the room. Actuaries are generally good risk managers. So combined assurance are essentially where you bring in legal, compliance, everyone together. Risk managers need to all contribute to that. Who believes in combined assurance? We've got one hand. Thanks. Who believes in risk management is all about governance? So it's all about keeping the board of directors happy. No board takers. Who believes in risk management is all about making the regulators and the policymakers happy? Okay. Our MC believes that. Any other takers? okay. And then the last one is more around who believes risk management is there so that we can build sustainable businesses? There we go. Awesome. So the reason we do risk management, and it's really, really tough to actually talk about this as a risk specialist. And I can tell you now, in my profession, most risk managers focus on board direction, what the regulators want, and combined assurance. They don't focus on the actual sustainability of the business. So we all know that that's the answer, but it's not what the core work, the output is of those functions. And so I think in an agile model, we get kept so much more accountable because we are very clear about our purpose, very clear about the strategy we're going to follow, and we need to build a sustainable business. So the risk management function in our world is really just the make a checker process. So my team will come in and just say, guys, have you applied your mind? Have you thought about what the consequences are for this environment? So I'm not going to go through the rest of the slides. I know I was asked to make it a little bit shorter because we've run out of time. But the key thing I wanted to just take out of here, and obviously this is the ISO standard for risk management, is just that risk management is all about just making, helping you make better decisions. That's all, that's the heart and soul of risk management. And in an agile environment, you've got to make those decisions very fast. So you've got to have a whole bunch of data at your fingertips. You've got to be able to do very good analysis. And then similarly, you've got to do your threat and opportunity assessment. This is a bit of academics from Oxford University. They've just coined the whole new tuna thing. But it's all about just uncertainty, volatility. Niku spoke about some of those things in his model as well. But wanting to make sure that you've taken your objective and your goal and you understand what are all those things that can hold me back from achieving that. And doing a bit of that analysis is really important. Not doing too much of that analysis either is also important. So you've got to take a certain amount of risk to be in business. And I think for us that sit in traditional corporates, we take too much time to do strategy sessions and scenario planning and VUCA and tuna assessments. Do a quick back of the matchbox exercise. Gut feel, a lot of us, that's the human value. So we work with a lot of artificial intelligence. Each and one of us have to have AI in our OKRs. So I use AI in legal risk compliance. If I don't use it, I haven't achieved my key objective, which is that I want to add value to the business in an enabling way so that I can do my job better and do it quicker. So if I don't use AI, well, sorry, because I use AI, I've realized what the real value is of the human being, is our gut. We've got a lot of experience, and we need to often just follow the gut. And I've realized in working in large corporates, that's where we are not willing to take enough risk, which leads into this slide, which is just saying the purpose of risk management is to focus on enabling success rather than avoiding failure. So I think that is something that I've really learned from the risk management profession and in an agile business is if you don't take a certain amount of risk, you won't actually succeed. And yes, you will fail. You won't always be right. But you can go and redesign and you can go and go on a different trajectory, go on a different path, learn something from the process. But the biggest mistakes most corporates make is just actually wanting to avoid failure. It's just too risky. I'm just not going to do it. Just a little bit academically, the Institute of Risk Management of South Africa issued their Integrated Strategy, Risk and Resilience Framework last year. This is world-leading stuff, guys. It was really good. It was recognized on the global stage. The essence of it is just saying you can't just manage your risk, have a little risk register here on the side. The essence of what this is saying is your leaders have to be risk intelligent. They've got to think about risk in the way that they do things. And the starting point is understanding the purpose and the vision, the direction you're going in, your objectives. Then you can be aware of what are the things that can hold me back from achieving that, your risks and your opportunities. And then we'll bring it into resilience. COVID has reminded us of that. We've got to build sustainable businesses. That's the end goal. So bringing those three elements together and not running them as separate disciplines. We often have the head of strategy and the head of risk in completely different places. And resilience, we sometimes put with the IT director. Those three disciplines have to work together to deliver a sustainable organization. And then my last thought just here is around risk appetite. And I think that's something that's so important for any business's success, especially in an agile environment. You've got to know how much risk you are willing to take. So quantify it. So know exactly, if I'm saying I'm willing to take a certain amount of compliance risk, what does it mean? Am I willing to pay R1 million fine or R2 million fine? Am I willing to have my license suspended for a couple of months? Make it practical. Put down what are the risks I'm willing to take. And so that's just the risk appetite sense, and this is how we practically do it in our organization. So we take all of our top risks, we plot them out. These are not our risks. This is just theoretically to show you the model. And then essentially the red line here shows our risk appetite and how willing we are willing to go outside of that. So we've got a risk tolerance threshold. And then you can see these risks are outside of our tolerance threshold. So those are the ones we actively put plans together to rectify. But the risks that are within our tolerance threshold, we're comfortable taking those risks and accepting them. So I think it's just an important thing to see it relative to. So let's say as an example, if you purely looked at just the risk ratings, you would have said, oh, well, that risk was rated a 3 versus that one is a 1. Or that one is a 5, etc. And it really just depends on how much. So this one, as an example, is a 3, but that's how much risk you're willing to take in this space. Whereas in the reputation side, if that risk was a 3, you wouldn't have been willing to take that because you clearly set out that you've quantified that risk as a number 1 risk in terms of your threshold. So I think just being able to verbalize and also put in numbers what the things are that you're willing to do in terms of your own boundaries within your business environment. And then the last question for all of you is who has a risk register and is aware of your business having a risk register or top risks being reported in the group? Hands up. Thank you. Who has an opportunity register? So all of your top opportunities, that is. Oh, there we go. Some leading thinking. Who uses integrated strategy, risk, and resilience? So having all of those disciplines talk to each other. So if I can leave you with some last thoughts, please put an opportunity register together if you don't have one. It's the key thing of making sure that your organization continues to deliver value. And the way we deliver value is by looking at our risks and opportunities. So this is just a sense of how we look at it. We've got our strategy drivers, so don't ever do a risk assessment without knowing what your objectives are. You've got to first know strategically, where am I going? What are my objectives? Then you put your threats together, and then you put your opportunity assessments together. There's always an opportunity. There's two sides to the coin. Think about COVID. Yes, there were a lot of people. It was a really tough time. Livelihoods were impacted. But there were a lot of new businesses that were flourishing during that environment. Our client numbers doubled because people had time to sit at home and actually start thinking about, one day I want to retire and I actually need to start investing to be able to achieve that goal. So there's a lot of opportunities in difficult situations as well. My last few thoughts are just on value drivers, is how we deliver value in a group. I mentioned it a bit earlier. We look at tracking our number of customers. We look at our average revenue per user. We look at our cost of serve. We look at trust. Trust is the difficult one to measure. And there we are doing a bit of testing and trying. One of the things we put in the trust pillar as an example is all of our staff members have to write those basic RPE exams so that they understand the market, so that they can understand how markets work. Everyone in the organization, doesn't matter what your role is. So you've got to know what our business is about. You've got to understand what it is to be in a trading environment. So that's one of our trust pillars, and that's something you can measure. You can see, did he pass the exam? Did he do well? Does he understand the business he's working in? Whether he's in IT, ops, finance, doesn't matter. You all need to know what the end goal and the purpose is of the company. And then our ESGs, environmental, social, governance. I started off by saying we focus on triple bottom line, people, planet, profit. As part of that, we've taken the profit bit and we've turned it around its head and we said purpose comes first and then profits will follow. Face it, we exist because all businesses need to become profitable at some point in time. But we believe we can do that by focusing on purpose first. And if we can prove that we deliver enough value to our client base through design and through innovation that they themselves have come up with in many cases, then we believe we can be a more sustainable business. So that's our model, and let's see how it all turns out. And through that purpose statement, we've ended up delivering on SDG number 10, which is reduced inequalities. I mentioned the problem statement we're wanting to solve. We want to close the wealth gap. Big problem we want to solve, but we can only practically do it in our world with what we believe we can deliver really well is fractionalized investments, opportunities, and making investing accessible, fun, engaging, not boring, so that people want to buy shares instead of buying shoes or buying lottery tickets, etc. And then we also contribute to SDG number 4, quality education, and SDG 8, decent work and economic growth. Because guys, face it, we've got 2 million investors, average age 30. Their investment amounts are not big, but they've now started investing where previously they didn't. And we've tried to make it popular, exciting, and something that is, something engaging that they themselves can also then influence in the rest of their communities to try and make it something that is a dinner, evening conversation around the dinner table. And that's the core purpose for us, is to make investing as easy and simple as possible. So that's it. That's the Easy Equities Agile model and fintech. And I hope that gave you a sense of our culture. But a culture is quite an intangible thing, and it's built over many years. But I think that was just to give you a sense of how we believe you can add a huge amount of growth and innovation by embracing a fintech culture. Just one last thought. I think it's an extremely brave business model. Before I joined the business, I spoke to the current CEO, Charles Savage, and he said to me, Nicola, you know what was the hardest thing for me? Was to do those 360 reviews because I became an employee. I'm not a CEO anymore. I'm not a director. And when you join my business, you will not be an executive. You will be a coach. If your team member doesn't like what you did, you've got to just face it. They're going to give you feedback. That's what an agile model is about. We're all equals. We equally contribute. We're equally accountable and responsible. Gives you a huge amount of responsibility. You've got to trust your team members. But it also questions that whole hierarchical structure. And I've seen how much value we can deliver in that environment. The fact that I'm younger or have more experience or whatever, doesn't matter. We all can add value in different areas. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Nicola. I'm thinking you guys will hate me if I don't give you at least a chance to ask. Is it one question, Hilda? Just one question. One question that you feel is the question that is the most impactful in this room. Sir, no pressure.
Does anyone else want to have a go?
No, mic's on you.
Thank you. That was great. It's a bit off topic, but with your easy investment platforms, what importance do you guys maybe also place on investor education? Because I can think it, like if you give a 20-year-old or whatever, they hear about the hottest new TikTok stock and how they can actually buy it with their own money. How does that fit into the picture as well? Do you guys, is there an effort as well to address that?
Yes. Yeah, no, definitely. Look, education is one of the key pillars for us. But remember, we're a fintech group. We're a small amount of people, about 200 people. So we don't believe in adding more people and cost to be able to solve problems. We do it through technology. So we're actually busy working on an AI tool where people can put, we've got a partnership, which I can't disclose confidentiality at this stage, but people can then talk to the AI tool to tell them their circumstances, their objectives, their goals, and the AI can give them not advice, but give them some direction in terms of what they can consider. We are also looking, we do have a digital advice license, so we can also then take that AI further, but we want to try and test it with clients first, see whether it's added value, and then take it further. But we do a lot of educational interventions digitally. It's mostly online on social media, because it's just very costly to get people in a room like this, and that's then it wouldn't be feasible for us to actually run a low cost platform like we do. So we try and do mostly digital. I just want to add one more thing. The one thing that's really been very valuable in our model is that you've got digital influencers, and a lot of those individuals end up forming their own, I would call it sort of digital stock files or digital investment clubs. And they've got good, big groups of people that then go with them. And they're mainly quite risk averse. They mainly do bundles, like they'll do unit trusts or they'll do ETFs. Remember, you can buy all of that through the platform. So they don't usually go big individual stock punting. It's just been interesting to see those digital influencers do they essentially taking the communities with them. Cool.
Thank you so much, Nicola. A round of applause, please.